Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And if this is your first time watching or listening to the show, know that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular subject. And know that sharing my show and others like it that focus on improved health, happiness, education, and success is just one powerful way we can make a positive difference in the world together. Now, every person, whether it's a baby, a child, a teenager, or an adult, interacts with the world in their own unique way. Yet, some have a harder time than others due to a variety of sensory processing issues, which can lead to motor delays, learning differences, frustration, anxiety, emotional behavior, and social challenges, as well as a diagnosis of ADHD or autism spectrum. As our guest today reveals, these children are not broken. We are all unique. Some just need more options and new ways to approach the world in order to make better sense of it all. Joining us to discuss this and more, Dr. Sally Fryer-Dietz is the founder and director of Integrative Pediatric Therapy and Integrative Concussion Therapy in Dallas, Texas. Sally lectures and teaches nationally and internationally on sensory integration, developmental therapy, craniosacral therapy, concussion rehabilitation, and the efficacy of combining traditional and alternative treatment methods. Now, she has written two books, When Kids Fly, Solutions for Children with Sensory Integration Challenges, and her latest book, Sensory Processing Solutions, Drug-Free Therapies to Realize Your Child's Full Potential. Now, Sally also has degrees in child development and physical therapy and her doctorate in pediatric physical therapy. She's licensed to practice in Texas and California and is certified in many therapeutic protocols, including advanced training in both vestibular and concussion rehabilitation. Sally, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you for having me on your show. I'm excited to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And Sally, before we delve into the book, can you share a little bit about your journey and what inspired you to write this new book, Sensory Processing Solutions?
Well, my journey into pediatrics started over 40 years ago, working with kids. I've always been committed to working with children in a therapeutic setting. I've been a physical therapist over 40 years now. And it became very close and personal when my own child, who at the time was 5 years old, began to show signs of some sensory integration processing issues. And that is really what prompted me to look into lots of different ways to help support him. Just because at that time in my professional life and in his little life, the only option was medication. And I was married to a physician. We went down that road for a very short time against what I really wanted to do. And it was not the right thing for him. And the rest is kind of history. So I opened my clinic for him and other kids like him, because there are so many children who are super bright, who go to private schools, who have everything going for them, who are just being misunderstood and misinterpreted and just really need to have a different way of figuring out how to learn best.
You know, as you were saying that, I envisioned a conversation. And if you could let us in on the conversation, take us back, and you, who are a physical therapist, which means you generally learn how to do a lot more things without medication, and a medical doctor husband who has gone through training, and I don't think I'm giving up any secrets when I say that Big Pharma is heavily involved in the training of medical doctors today. share with us a little bit about how that conversation went?
Well, you know, most physicians in general are trained in what we call allopathic medicine, which is medications, watching for diseases and those kinds of things, but not necessarily developmental pediatrics. Mm-hmm. And my background was in developmental pediatrics and developmental therapy. But, you know, many physicians tend to feel like their word is the last word. And so, you know, we had a lot of conversations you know, part of being a therapist is also being able to listen and have a good communication and dialogue. But, you know, we compromised and I was right. So, you know, in our case, our son really did flourish because of the therapy that he was provided. And he's now a dad himself, you know, these days, and very successful. So it does pay off in the end. But, you know, when your child is young and is struggling, you know, it can be mom or dad, but who's ever with that child the most is the one who really is, you know, your heart goes out to them. And even if you're a therapist, like in my case, there are things as a parent that are hard to see in your own child. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, having the right kind of therapist or somebody who you can talk to who really can look at what's going on with your child and offer solutions for help becomes so important. These kids really need an advocate. They need somebody who's there for them.
I felt like I was putting you on the spot a little bit, going, okay, let's go back and let's talk about a personal conversation between you and your husband. And he's like, who is this guy? So let's talk about helping children. But I'd like to start with, you know, in my generation, our generation, ADHD was the thing. You know, right. That was the whole thing, and it was especially with boys. So let's talk a little bit about ADHD and how can the therapies that you talk about in your book, you know, really help in those situations?
Right. Well, it is a personal thing because that is what my son was diagnosed with at mm-hmm. the age of five. And I'm not kidding when I tell you at five, the big impetus was to put kids on medication. That was the first, that was a go-to kind of thing. And he was clearly bright. There were things that he was memorizing, you know, books rather than reading them. Wow. He was getting away with, you know, what's a really truly a gift that he uses, you know, every day in his life now for sure. You know, were all things that were to the teachers a red flag. Mm-hmm. However, as his mother, his parent, looking at how he approached the world, all I saw was this brilliant little kid, you know, who's yeah. he was a little oppositional and he was doing things in his own way, but he was very focused on what he wanted to do. And you know, those are all things that play into that diagnosis of what we call ADHD or attention deficit. The problem with that is a lot of times these kids really do get misinterpreted. They're super bright, so they get frustrated if they can't, you know, the things that they don't want to do, they know they should be able to do, but they can't do them well, so they avoid doing them. And you start seeing these behavior patterns that show up with young kids that for a teacher who has a child in their class who can't sit still and doesn't want to pay attention to, you know, math facts or reading because they're bored out of their mind with that, they'd rather be building something over at another corner of the classroom, there's a mismatch there. And that's mm-hmm. why so many of these kids start getting in trouble. You know, teachers are frustrated with them. They don't understand them. Even his, you know, my son's dad used to laugh about how his teacher, when he was a kid, said, well, if I could just tie him to a chair, I know he would, you know, learn better. You know, so things maybe were worse even farther, you know, longer ago than my son. But, you know, the sad reality is a lot of kids have suffered as a result of being labeled with something that actually really is a gift, you know, yes. to have that kind of intelligence mm-hmm. And made to feel bad about themselves when there's something you can do about it, you know? So, anyway, there's just lots of different options, and not everybody is the same. There's different reasons for inattention, you know, across the board. Mm-hmm. Some children, some individuals may need some kind of medication at some point, but my philosophy is we should do everything in our power to help support a child's nervous system on their own when they can really develop the neuro networks to help them in the long run, rather than giving them a medication that is just going to support their nervous system without having the opportunity to build those pathways themselves.
And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this show and why I love the fact that you wrote this book, is I think there are a lot of parents out there that they don't know what to do. And they're you know, if they're talking to the school or whatever, there's like, I don't know what to do. And if they get referred to somebody who only knows the path of drugs, then they're really not seeing the whole picture and they're not getting these other opportunities. And I think as I told you and before we came on that, you know, one of the businesses that I was involved in for many years had to do with therapeutic transport. And many of these young people that we were taking to programs were already on drugs. They were already being heavily medicated. And their approach with us was, oh, you're probably just like everybody else. You think I'm stupid or you think I'm this. And they have all of these labels that they feel that's being placed on them. And our approach was, no, actually, I think it's just the opposite. I think you probably have superior intelligence and you just get frustrated with us that can't see the world in the same way that you are seeing it.
Right.
And I would see an instant adjustment in them. All of a sudden, they were more attentive. All of a sudden, they felt better about themselves. And not that I was trying to be a therapist, that they were going to a place where they would get therapy, but I was also letting them know that this is the way in which the place where you're going, this is the way they're going to deal with you.
Right.
And there was so much growth that came from that. And they were so much more connected to us when we would then take them to the program. And the programs often would say, well, we really appreciate this because we feel that it helps us go into what it is we need to do to help them. So mm-hmm. Anyway, so again, it's just why I'm so thankful that you have put this book out, because I think there's just a lot of parents that just don't know what their options are.
Right. Actually, you know, you did ask me, why did I write this book? And really the impetus for writing the book, both of the books actually, was exactly that. It was for teachers and it was for parents. Mm-hmm. And it was for the pediatricians and the other therapists that work with kids. But I was getting from teachers, how do I talk to parents? You know, how do I bring up these concerns? And so many times the teacher was, you know, didn't want to say anything because, you know, for many years there was a, like when my son was young, the teacher almost overstepped. They were more prone to put out their own diagnosis, you know, and mm-hmm. nobody can diagnose any kind of a medical like ADHD except for a physician. So, you know, even I can't label somebody with a diagnosis under my license. But in the, you know, in the old days, not that long ago, teachers were saying, I think your child might have ADD and you need to, you know, to go to the pediatrician and tell them, you know, they're having all these problems. And that's how it started. That's how our journey started, was being told that the teacher thought he had ADHD and, you know, should go to the doctor to see. And the doctor said, well, sure, let's put him on a pill and see what happens. And that, you know, that's just not a good way. So the teachers needed the information to understand what other options there were. And the parents needed to understand that their kids were not broken. Mm-hmm. And there were ways to help children really realize their full potential and be able to be more successful in school. And in an ideal situation, it's the teachers and the parents working together, you know, because it's not just what happens at school or just what happens at home, but it's a team approach between everybody who has something to do with your child in helping them to feel loved and supported and understood, and provide them with the sensory motor framework that they can be successful.
I know you also touch on autism, and you know, the statistics now on autism shows that it has been on the rise now for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's an area to where, you know, there's too much focus on, you know, what is the drug that's going to be able to fix this. What therapies, and I know you talk about some in the book, help with autism?
Well, so first, I want to talk about sensory integration, because it applies to autism and it applies to ADHD, and it applies to you and me and everybody else listening. Every one of us is on this sensory motor spectrum called sensory integration, how we all interpret the world. Mm-hmm. At the high end of your spectrum are the people who just everything kind of, it just clicks easily. You've got a good wide range of receptors, and you can learn how to dance and speak three languages and all kinds of other stuff. And there's not a whole lot of people like that. I'm not like that, but there's other people like not, you know, like that too. And then on the lower end, you've got your kids who are severely autistic, where everything mm-hmm. goes in and it gets stuck, and maybe one or two things come out. So we're all really, if you look at it that way, we're all a little bit autistic. You know, we're all on this spectrum together. Just how many glitches do you have that get in the way of how you're able to process information?
Good point.
So what kind of therapies help with autism are the same kinds of therapies that help with any other developmental spectrum problem or challenge. And it starts with exactly what you said in your transport business, is meeting the child where they are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being there for them, not telling them you have to do this, but it's like, okay, here we are, and figuring out what it is that is getting in the way of their potential, and helping to guide them through an environment where they're able to get the kind of sensory motor experiences that they need to support their nervous system so that they can receive information more appropriately. And that's kind of a simplified way of saying there's lots of different therapies in there that can do that, but you have to meet them where they are first. And then you have to figure out, what are the things that make them tick? What are they successful at? And what are their biggest challenges? And you build on those successes while you help to support and enhance and lessen those challenges. So you're always building in the positive. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, kids are invested, they're having fun, and it's self-motivating. And that is what drives that neurotransmission and neural growth, right, of those, you know, nerves coming together, that allows them to be able to do more and more on their own. So how we get there is through a lot of different ways, but that's really what we're trying to do.
Now, so while we're talking about the sensory integration, I know that you also go into the book and talk about some of the similarities between sensory integration deficits and the effects of concussion. Now, we had somebody on here a couple of years ago, I think, that had to do with talking about the concussions that, you know, that high school and college, you know, football players were getting. What are some of the similarities, and can some of the same, you know, therapies help in those situations?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad you asked about that. And actually, it's kind of interesting how I ended up really getting into more concussion rehab. And it was, we first started getting a lot of referrals for children and adults who'd had concussions for a therapy called cranial sacral therapy, because it helped to calm the nervous system down and allow it to be more receptive to sensory input coming in. It's a great complementary therapy for all the other things that we do. With a concussion, you have an injury to the brain, and your brain is kind of like, it's you know, shaken up. It's got, you know, we've got extra metabolites kind of, you know, circulating in the central nervous system, and you have headaches and foggy thinking, and there's other symptoms when you've had a severe enough concussion to get in the way. But a lot of the cause of those symptoms are things like vestibular dysfunction, which is your balance systems, which is what we see with children with sensory integration disorder. We see functional vision problems. You know, it's hard to, you know, be on the computer because of the different lights, or, you know, visual motor things cause headaches in the world of concussion. Well, we have functional vision problems with children with learning differences and, you know, different developmental sensory integration spectrums. Same kind of thing helps to support that. So all of a sudden there was this similarity of, well, these concussion people were having all the same kinds of problems, different etiology, because it wasn't developmental, but as our developmental pediatric side. And we began looking at that and, again, delving into what are the things that really help to support somebody in rehab from a concussion. And the vestibular and the functional vision were two big, big pieces of that. So there's all this overlap between those two things. And with both the pediatric, developmental pediatric side and the concussion side, we do a lot of work with the vestibular system and the functional vision to help support the nervous system to be function as optimally as possible.
So would you, can you walk us through an example, if you can take either one of your cases or something, and just walk through an example so that the people that are out there, if their child is somewhere close to something, you know, that you're describing, and then go into what type of therapy or, you know, sensory integration that was done, and then what the final result was.
Okay, so for a sensory integration kind of example, we'll get children who come to our clinic at different stages of school, but one of the big times is around the age of five or six, because they're now no longer a preschooler. They made it through kindergarten. If they were having challenges in kindergarten, you know, there's a tendency for a lot of pediatricians or people to think, well, they'll grow out of it. Just wait, you know, when they get into first grade, everything's going to be okay. Well, they get into first grade and they don't want to sit still. They are not too interested in reading, maybe this little person, or maybe they don't want to do math or whatever. Anyway, they're kind of getting in other people's business, and they're not settling down to do what it is that the teacher wants them to do. There's certainly different kinds of school environments where that might show up more or less. And, you know, this is where the boys really get picked on, because more often than not, it's the boys who become the class clowns or the troublemakers, or just, you know, are kind of a little more challenging than a little girl who might have the same problems, but the way they deal with it is just being super shy. You know, they don't want to do anything. They don't want to get engaged with other groups of kids. They may be the, you know, showing up in a completely different way. And I don't mean all boys do it this way and all girls do it that way. It goes both ways, but this is just for an example. So anyway, the teacher, they have their first parent conference. Teacher tells the parent that, you know, he's having trouble, you know, with his letters, and we're having, you know, different things and maybe some reversals, and doesn't like to hold a, you know, really messy writing, and doesn't seem to want to settle down and do his work. So if they're lucky, they have a teacher who says, you might want to go and have a sensory motor evaluation, and we refer them to a therapist like what we do in our clinic, who is trained in sensory integration and developmental pediatrics. And that's really key. It's not like just going to a physical therapist or an occupational therapist or even a speech therapist who just does more traditional medicine, but it's somebody who is specifically trained in sensory motor and child development and understands kids and learning differences and really, you know, sees the whole child. What we would do then is do a complete sensory motor developmental evaluation. And that looks at what is their developmental profile from birth? You know, when they, you know, what were their developmental milestones like? You know, what were they like as a child? What were their preferences to, you know, play with? You know, did they like going outside? Did they like, you know, just all those different little things that add up. And then we have the kind of testing we do. It's not a psychoeducational test. It's not sitting down and looking at, you know, how well they process numbers or letters or anything like that. It's a really looking at all their gross and fine motor development. How do they hold a pencil? When they're writing, are they able to sit still on their chair, or do they shift their weight to one side and write on the other side of their body, indicating that maybe their eyes are not crossing their midline? Mm-hmm. How do they sit on the chair? Are they slumped on their desk? You know, are they wiggling around a lot? You know, so we look at the gross and fine motor aspects of their development, and then we take them into one of our sensory motor gyms. That's like, I mean, one of the, my favorite thing of my grandkids is to come to the gym. You know, we have climbing walls and we have zip lines and we have all this hanging equipment because we're working with vestibular issues. And we see how they interact in that environment. Are they shy about it? Are they a little hesitant to try something new? Or do they just like run in and have no impulse control and no safety awareness and are just like all over the place? And we look at all those things. We score the test. We talk to the parents. You know, sometimes we'll have the teacher will fill out a little sensory profile for what they see in the classroom. And the therapist looks at all of the patterns in that child's development to date. And what that evaluation tells you is, what is that child doing at that moment in time? It doesn't give you any kind of prognostic indicator as to where they're going to be in 2 years. It says, okay, right now at the age of whatever you are, 5, 6, 7, this is where you are compared to your peers. You know, this is talking to parents. And if a child is, you know, we can tell kids who are super bright. I mean, they just, they have their minds, you know, you just, when you do this long enough, you know, you don't need an IQ test to tell you when you've got a really bright kiddo in front of you. And when their body is not functioning, you know, to that level, or even to the level that you might expect for their age, that's telling us we have a big discrepancy. Mm-hmm. And we want to support that underlying sensory motor development to get it to a level that's more cohesive with where they are in their, you know, educational process or their, you know, just where they are intellectually. You can have somebody who is scoring, you know, who has a super high intelligence, who scores in the average range, and just that discrepancy alone can set them up for having problems. Yeah. Or you can have somebody who's, you know, in the typical range, who's scoring way below what they should be doing at that stage. And, you know, those are easier to pick out, certainly in the schools, because that's what they have to go, the public schools, because you fall so many standard deviations below the norm and you can qualify for therapy. But it's never the same kind of therapy as what we do in a clinic setting, because it's more educationally based.
Got it. We're speaking with Dr. Sally Fryer-Dietz. The book is Sensory Processing Solutions. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Conflict International are experts at uncovering the truth. Our specialist team has decades of experience in providing a range of bespoke investigation and intelligence services to companies and individuals. Whether you need professional screening or background checks of employees, due diligence of potential clients or business partners, asset tracing services, or surveillance, Conflict International has a rapid response team on hand to get you to the heart of the matter. Our key strength is in our global capabilities. We can tap into an extensive network of trusted professional investigators based in most jurisdictions worldwide, enabling us to go almost anywhere a case takes us. Conflict International has decades of experience with a diverse range of skills among our team, developed from backgrounds in military and security intelligence services, as well as practice lawyers. Visit our website today at conflictinternational.com to find out more about our services. That's conflictinternational.com. Global reach, local knowledge.
And we're back. We're talking about sensory integration. And Sally, I want to talk a little bit about stem cell, and if this is something that you've delved into. Next year, I'm flying to Panama to meet with doctors at the Stem Cell Institute. What is your belief as to stem cell therapy for children diagnosed with autism?
You know, I wish I could comment on that. I really don't have enough information to say I think it's a great thing or not such a great thing. I think stem cell therapy has been used for a lot of different things these days, orthopedic as well as developmental or brain injury. And there are, in my experience, there are some people who have said this is awesome, and there's other people who have spent a lot of money and not had the desired results. So, you know, I think there's still a lot of research that probably needs to be done. I wouldn't rule anything out without having a personal experience with it myself. It's kind of what got me into cranial sacral therapy in the first place. but I think it's, you know, it's something that's certainly worth looking at.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I'm going, is that I've heard so much about it. It appears as though that in this country there's there's some issues of kind of who's going to control it. And so by going and meeting with somebody that's doing it in another country, I'm hoping that I can get some really good information. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to sort of set up a scenario. I know with many parents, as they're starting to find these things out, they're doing so, again, through their school, but yet they don't know what to do. And I've spoken with many parents that have said, well, you know, we had an IEP, and that's an independent educational plan for those that haven't dealt with it. You know, we had an IEP, and they set my child up for speech therapy.
Right.
And that's the only thing that they did. So, and again, in the past, I've worked with many, you know, educational consultants, and I've sat in on IEPs myself. How should parents work with their school to help their child if they believe that their child needs therapy? And what should they then do if what the school suggests does not make sense in regards to what they think their child needs?
Right. Well, here's where it gets very confusing for parents.
Sure.
Every state has a different set of laws that provide therapeutic services through the school districts. However, all of those laws relate to what we call, or what is called, educational goals. So what that means is when you go and have an evaluation through your school district, they're looking at what does this child need to be successful in this school? And many times those things are not the same thing that you look at when you have a complete sensory motor developmental evaluation. Your private therapists are going to be the ones who are kind of operating outside of typical insurance reimbursement a lot of times. They're really looking at what is it that's going to make the difference for a child overall in their, you know, sensory motor development, in their success in school, in how they learn, how they behave, you know, with other people. But for the school districts, it's really more about, okay, how can they behave in this classroom?
Right.
So those are different things. So a lot of times kids will be evaluated by the school district and they'll end up with speech because that seems like the obvious way to deal with communication if they're having trouble communicating.
Right.
But what's kind of missing in the equation, what contributes to speech, is underlying vestibular function. They share the same neural pathways. And
right.
So kids who get sensory motor development or lots of sensory motor experiences often will do better in their speech. But, you know, schools, they do the best they can. You know, right now we have 1 in 40 children being diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. And you think about all the learning differences and attention deficits and everything else that, you know, is on top of that. It's amazing that anybody is typical anymore in school. Right. So they have to have some way of drawing the line as to who they can provide services for and who they won't. So what they will do most often is you have to be more than 2 standard deviations below the norm to qualify for any kind of service, whether it's PT, OT, or speech. So for PT, mm-hmm. that means can they get to the bathroom?
Right.
And if they can't get to the bathroom, then they'll probably qualify for PT, or they can't walk, or there's, you know, some other major thing going on. For OT, if they're lucky and if they have something, you know, a diagnosis like autism, they'll probably qualify for OT services, but it might be once or twice a month. Or maybe it's 30 minutes once a week, which, you know, I see that less and less. It's not enough to make a difference on your overall sensory motor system. What, you know, what I recommend to parents, you know, we'll see a lot of children who go to private schools. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, they were able to get into the school. It just, there's something that's, you know, getting in the way of their being successful. And, but they're spending a lot of money at school. And private mm-hmm. schools do not have to adhere to the same standards as your public schools. So if you go to a private school, you don't qualify for anything.
Right.
If you've got a lot of issues that are getting in the way, like with, you know, severe autism or something else, then it probably makes more sense to go to your public school, do the testing there, qualify for as many services as you can, and then spend your tuition dollars on private therapy, you know, to get the support that you need to really work on the whole individual. And
you know, I like that.
It's, yeah. You know, it's hard to, it's like, where do you put your focus? And, you know, so many times there's, you know, big arguments between schools and parents because kids aren't qualifying for services because they're doing better than what the schools are looking at to support them in the classrooms. And so you end up just frustrated and not getting what anybody needs.
Well, if I could hand you a magic wand, here it comes. Okay. If I could hand you a magic wand, what are the changes that you would make so that more children could get the help that they need, or how we can reverse some of these trends?
So my magic wand would be that all children, first of all, we don't focus on reading and writing in preschool. Mm-hmm. Preschoolers, they need to play. They need to learn how to relate to each other. They need to be strengthening their big muscles and, you know, strengthening their emotional muscle of, you know, how to share and all those kinds of things. So we get rid of all the academics, you know, in the preschool. When they get into, you know, first grade and up, let's get these kids outside more. They still need to be moving. You know, too many kids are stuck in a desk too early, and the activities that really help to support a healthy nervous system. And I'm talking about all kids, you know, kids right. who have issues as well as kids who maybe are doing okay on their own. They all need to play. They all need to build muscles. They all need to run around. Too many teachers still keep kids in from recess because somebody didn't get their homework done or some worksheet needed to be completed. And those are the first ones that need to be out on the playground because that's what's going to help to support their nervous system and organize them to be able to, you know, focus long enough to get a, you know, something like that done. You know, more More music, more creative arts, all these things are now like electives. They're something that, we don't get to, see enough of in schools, and more time is spent on, studying to a test for these little, younger kids. And I think we're doing our children a disservice by being so hyper focused on just the academic part and forgetting about, a whole person and how you grow and develop in the first place.
Are you seeing some of these things being done in other countries and where they can show the, the statistics on how it's helping?
Well, you can actually see it in this country in certain educational, systems like your, a lot of your Montessori schools and
Montessori.
Different schools where, it's more an experiential learning environment where they're really using all their senses to learn and grow and develop. And I like to tell parents and teachers when I do talks about just to think about if you're learning about a pine cone and you just have a iPad in front of you with a picture of a pine cone and a word that says pine cone, or even worse, a flashcard that's a pine cone with a word. That's a very different experience than holding on to a pine cone and feeling, prickly parts and the stickiness and the smell, and it's lighter than it looks for its mass and all these different things that go into what a pine cone is. Too many kids are learning through, we have parents who do flashcards with babies. It's like, that's missing the point. we need to be playing with our babies and holding them and rocking them and singing to them and, all those experiential things. And we wonder why autism is so high. It's a lot of different factors that are playing into it.
I have a couple of thoughts, but one of them that popped in was, can I let you know now that you have an invitation to come back on the show when you announce you're running for the head of the Department of Education? Can we do that on this show?
That would be great. Yeah. I know. I wish I could sit in on one of those meetings one of these days, but yeah.
There are some that say that a lot of the problem is diet. When you think of the therapies that you do and such, is there also a dietary component, which is part of which is just, get us all off so much sugar and processed food?
Well, we are all physical therapists, occupational therapists, and speech therapists. So we're not dietitians by any means, but we do have referrals that we make to, we do pay attention to diet. And I would say a majority of the families that we work with are pretty savvy about diet, but we refer to holistic practitioners who look at diet, look at allergies, look at some of these other things that can play a part in sleep apnea. In children, that's huge. If you can't get a good night's sleep, you're gonna have problems paying attention during the day. Just like adults. If we notice there's other things going on, we have referrals that we will always make to get so a parent can decide what they're going to do. But nutrition, in my experience, does play a big part in your growth and development and how you're able to pay attention. Too much sugar, it does, I don't care what anybody says, it does make a difference.
Yeah. It's, there's so much information out there on it, and I'm glad that you're seeing more and more parents that are recognizing that, that this can be a contributor to some of the problems they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. We've only got about 4 minutes, but I would love to end on a couple of your favorite success stories.
Oh, I have so many. I don't think I've ever seen a child not do better. Seriously, when you build on success and you allow a child to find new ways to do things and be successful, I can't tell you how many times we get asked by parents if, you know, if we'll go home with them, you know, especially when they first start, because, you know, these kids, they really do grow and develop. I mean, I've been doing this long enough now that I have kids that I saw as kids who's now they're bringing their kids to me.
I love it.
So only they get it more than, you know, previous generations in many ways, because I live through it. But I just think, you know, we all deserve a chance, and life has gotten a lot more complicated, you know, and certainly for kids, and being able to, you know, play. You know, I'm a big advocate for play, and I just say, you know, let your kids play, have fun, do things together, and enjoy life.
Well, again, I just can't thank you enough for what you're doing. I love the fact that you are starting with our children that are so young, and I just know that you are making a huge positive difference in our next generation, and that is where we need it most. So going back to the book, I assume it can be purchased anywhere books are sold, Amazon.
Yes.
Or wherever. I also like to share with people that, you know, if you have your favorite local bookstore, let's help keep them in business. So call them, see if they have the book. If they have it, great, get it there. If they don't, they can order it.
Yeah.
You know, wait a couple of days. They'll have it there for you. I know we all go with a lot of the easy ways sometimes, but, you know, if we can help keep the local bookstores around, I think that's a great opportunity as well.
Yes.
And Sally, where is the best way for somebody to get in touch with you?
So we're located in Dallas, Texas. It's Integrative Pediatric Therapy, or our website is www.iptkids.com. And they can always email me at sallyf@iptkids.com or give our office a call.
Okay. And now if you're driving out there, if you weren't able to take all that down, we'll make sure that we have it in our show notes for, you know, for our site, which is, you know, answers.network. Now, Sally, is there an association or something that you belong to? So if somebody's out there and they go, oh my God, I love this, but I'm in New York City, you know, is there an association that they can go to or a place to where there's a list of people who have met certain qualifications to be able to join that association?
There really isn't. I mean, I'm in the APTA, the American Physical Therapy Association, but there's not a big sensory integration developmental pediatric association. I would say, you know, look in, you know, Google sensory integration, physical and occupational therapy, and go visit these clinics. Go, you know, call them, find out, you know, what they do, what their approach is. Certainly, if you read my book, there's all kinds of, you know, talks about vestibular and proprioceptive and tactile and all the things that are a part of what we call sensory integration therapy. And then, you know, good clinics have therapists who are trained in lots of different therapies and modalities, because everybody is different, as you know. So the more options a place has to offer, I think that's great. You know, just it's the world is a big place, and so we just have to kind of see who's nearby and do your best. I wish there was an association, but there's not one that I know of.
Well, I first of all, when you have your next book or event or anything, let me know. I'd love to have you back on. I'd love to be able to talk about it some more. And only I think that we would need to do it remotely from your location so that I can climb the wall as well.
I know. You really do need to come see what we do here. It's very cool.
I would love that. And I have a son that's in Dallas. So that would give me a great reason to fly out there.
Okay. When you come out to visit, you better call me.
You got it.
Okay. Thanks so much, Alan.
All right. And again, thank you so much. And for everybody out there, be with us next week. We're going to be joined by Dorothy Susskind, and she's going to discuss her new book, Workplace Bullying. So this is another area, and we haven't touched on that much, but I think we're running into a time where there's so much going on at work that was not been addressed in the past, but it's being addressed now, and that's why you need to come and listen and when Dorothy tells us more about it. Now, for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews. You can do so by going to our website at answers.network or just subscribe to the show. You can do it through Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, Rumble, Spreaker, BeatShoe, YouTube, and many other Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. I can do it. Podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It'll help us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. The next time you're on Facebook, X, or Instagram, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.